Hey,
So,
Salt,
before
I don't think we have David online. Could you start with a verse? Hazel, are you there?
I am. I was wondering if David Howerton would read the verse. And we are getting a little feedback. Sounds like a car or something.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where that's coming from. If you could, Hazel, go ahead and say the verse. I don't think David Howerton is online at the moment.
Okay. Well, I think it's appropriate that I do the verse that Rudolf Steiner gave to Ita Wegman on his birthday, February 27th, 1924. And he addressed this to my Misa. Hearts will read karma, which... This sounds. Can people hear pretty well, though?
Yeah, while you were speaking, you were very clear. And then after you stopped speaking, we got some noise. But okay, go ahead and introduce Ross, and let's get started, Hazel.
Well, I was asked to give just a sort of a brief overview of what the Central Regional Council has been doing. You know, it's pretty recent that we started doing these Zoom calls. But before that, you know, we started with basic themes. We will think about a theme and we'll work with that for a year or two. And a while ago, we were working with Speaking with the Stars, and that really organically led us into the Bridging Project, which was what we worked with in the Life Between Death and Rebirth. And through that process, we actually were able to meet the Great American Eclipse, where we had a pageant in St. Louis. And it was at that time we really thought it kind of made sense that the through line would continue into this idea of Rudolf Steiner's core mission of karma and reincarnation. And so we've been working with that now for a while. And we alternate between having study sessions where we'll take five volunteers and we'll break down a chapter, a lecture into five parts. And people will sort of take these things in. Everybody reads it on their own. And then the five volunteers will put into their own words the part that they read. And so we get a nice overview from different people's impressions of the lecture. And then we have a discussion. And it's been really a great way to study. And then in between those times, we have special guests. We recently had Linda Berg come in and do some work with us, biography work, working with karma and reincarnation. And tonight, we have a wonderful, wonderful, very special guest. Ross Rentilla, who is a long-time anthroposopher. He's been in the society for many, many years, member of the first class, and a member also of the Christian community. And Dr. Rentilla served on the board of the American College of Anthroposophical Medicine for many years, and has been practicing anthroposophical medicine here in Chicagoland for, gosh, I think it's like 35 years or something. and he's very knowledgeable about anthroposophy. He gives lectures here in the States and internationally as well. And Ross has published and written many scientific research articles. And he has a new book out called Childhood Illnesses and Immunizations. So look for that. It's recently been released. And besides the anthroposophical medicine, you know, his really deep research as co-founder of True Botanica and the Lily Kalisco Institute for Anthroposophical Medicine, which he really works hard at with his team. His current studies have really been around this interest of trying to understand the seven rhythms of the foundation stone meditation. And he's actually going to give a presentation at the Rudolf Steiner branch in Chicago this Friday. If you're in town, or, you know, come on down and see Ross live in person. And he's hosted workshops around the foundation stone for many years as well in Wisconsin. So tonight we are thrilled to have him come and talk about the karma and reincarnation of Rudolf Steiner and Ita Wegman, a really, really powerful topic. So with that, I give you Ross Rentia.
Well, thank you so much, Hazel. And in keeping with some of the events for today, one of the speakers in Washington was giving a eulogy to the past George Bush, and apparently he read that eulogy to him, and George Bush at the end said, "Gee, so much about me in there." So thank you for saying so much. I just hope that I can do the theme at least a little bit of justice. I want to thank the Central Regional Council for inviting me through Hazel. And I just want to share with you that I've heard about Ita Wegman and got a sense of her importance way back in 1972 or so, when in Ann Arbor, in Dr. Ernst Katz's house, he invited the then General Secretary of the Dutch Society and a friend, an anthroposophist called Yuri Janse. And he talked about Ita Wegman, and I didn't quite understand everything, but a couple of years later, it just struck me suddenly what the importance of this personality was for anthroposophy in Rudolf Steiner's life. And so it's been a number of years. But frankly, only recently, due to the invitation that I've received to talk tonight and the struggle that I put into it to actually ask myself the question, what do I really want to present so that it does not become a not merely history lesson, but just a history lesson, but rather that we can do something with it afterwards. You know that that's my concern, that we are able to bring it into life, that it doesn't just stay up in our heads. And as Rudolf Steiner said one time in the Theosophy of the Rosicrucian, theosophy shouldn't just come into the head, not even only into the heart, but it needs to come all the way into our hands and into our daily activity. But this daily activity should be from a higher spiritual point of view. So with that, let me start presentation here, if my PowerPoint will function, okay. And what I would like to begin with is to share with you this picture that was taken in Penmanmore in Wales in 1923. an important conference that Rudolf Steiner was giving. And you can see there the two central pillars of his karma, of his activity in the 20th century incarnation. So on one side, you have Marie Steiner, born von Sievers, that asked him originally at the beginning of the 20th century the question, can we have a mystery stream? Can we have a Christian Western stream in Europe as opposed to just continuing with the Eastern traditions? And Rudolf Steiner said the question was posed. I could now start working, and one thinks that one can work with just about anybody, but that's not true. One can only develop certain activities if the right person comes along. So she helped him in the beginning to develop the Anthroposophy on Earth. At one point, he says, I worked together with Marie von Sievers. I had to bring the content. She helped to organize and administer the society and do everything that had to be done so that the word could get out. A crucial person in his life that he had a definite karma with. Now, we know a lot less about her karma than we know about the karma of Ita Wegman, because they were different personalities. And Rudolf Steiner made very nuanced revelations about who was who, depending on what that person needed and what was appropriate. About Ita Wegman, he let known a lot. And Ita Wegman met him perhaps the first time in a significant manner in 1907. And at that time, there was a demand made by Rudolf Steiner that the members of the Theosophical Society would decide for themselves, do they want to go with Annie Besant, the Eastern Oriental way, or did they want to join his esoteric school? Ita Wegman comes to him and she reports that, quote, we did not talk a lot, we understood each other very well, I just said to him, I will stay with you. At that point, his face became beaming. He took her hand, and now comes something really interesting. He made over her the Michael sign, the sign that he was going to make only later in 1924, literally at the end of his life again, when he was giving the repeat lessons of the seven lessons of the first class. So that was the first meeting where she had this primary intuition that she belonged with him. Now, it took a long time from that moment until she became very actively close to him, because when she asked, in fact, Marie Steiner, then at that time Marie von Sievers, what should she do? Marie von Sievers suggested to her, obviously, at the probably at the prompting of Rudolf Steiner, that she should study medicine and she should go to Switzerland, because Marie von Sievers says our entire movement is going to Switzerland anyway. By the way, once again, that's 1907. So Ita Wegman goes to Switzerland, goes into medical school, and she spends a lot of years away from Rudolf Steiner. Later on, she bemoans the fact that she had been away from him for so many years, because she started coming back really only in 1921 when she opens up a medical clinic near Dornach in Arlesheim. And Rudolf Steiner tries to pacify her and says, well, not pacify, that's a wrong word, but Rudolf Steiner says to her, well, my dear, there was that karma that we had to bridge. And now that karma is fulfilled, now we can work together. So the years pass, 1922 comes, the burning of the Goetheanum, and Ita Wegman on that night gets the next, let's call it wave of intuitions of what her karma actually is, how she's connected to Rudolf Steiner. But then comes this conference in Penmanmore in Wales, in the middle of the Druid Stones, where she then has a complete full awakening. And she realizes that Rudolf Steiner has been her teacher, and she tells him that. And Rudolf Steiner reports back to her that the spiritual world was jubilating that she had that that she had that insight, that she had that awakening. And it is at that time that she poses now the question that is similar to the importance of the question that Marie von Sievers had asked years before. She asks Rudolf Steiner, why are you presenting everything in medicine in such an intellectual manner? Why can we not have a mystery medicine again, an initiate medicine? And Rudolf Steiner confirms that he had been waiting for such a question, and that it was important that a human being, uninitiated, would ask an initiate for the return of an esoteric impulse. And based on that, he can tell her, the mystery medicine will live again. He confirms that this will happen, although he doesn't tell her at that moment yet exactly how he was going to do it into the future. And this leads now to her, to the two of them becoming closer by Rudolf Steiner revealing to her and writing for her this document that I'm showing you here, where it's in German, but basically what it says, let's see if my pointer would show. Okay, here we go. Essentially, it repeats five times, I am asking at the Tigris. It nods friendly, yes. So he is confirming the incarnation between them as Gilgamesh and Eabani. And then, of course, he says, I am asking in Ephesus, the mystery center of Ephesus, and it nods friendly, yes, confirming that the two of them had been there. He was the teacher, Kratilos. She was the student, and the two of them had already then gone into mysteries of the health and healing, of the building of the etheric body as the human being incarnates to the earth. Then it continues, I am asking to the Kabirs, they nod friendly, yes. Then I'm asking at the Hill of Odelia, says yes. I'm asking in the monk's cell, it nods friendly, yes. The monk's cell is her incarnation of Reginald of Pipernus, who is the assistant monk to Thomas Aquinas. And then these last sentences here say, but at the, you know, at the Dornach Hill, the soul must find the courage to understand how the Rosicrucian sun needs to be accomplished again. This is a very rough comment that I'm making, not a literal translation. But it's important to know that that beginning with this moment, there is a different relationship between them. And what happens next is that we move on to October of 1923. And in October of 1923, they have a gathering after one of his lecture cycles in Vienna, in Austria. And in, I would say, typical fashion of Rudolf Steiner, who announces sometimes the most earth-shattering events in the most human and modest, self-effacing way humanly possible, he tells one of the quote older members that, oh, I will write now a medical book with Dr. Veeckman. And Ita Veeckman overhears this literally and is absolutely amazed to hear that. And one has to keep in mind that Rudolf Steiner had tried for years to have other physicians write what he called a vademecum, meaning a method for anthroposophical medicine. And that had never succeeded. Nobody felt, appropriately or not, that they were qualified to write such a thing. And suddenly Rudolf Steiner says, here, I will write this with Frau Veeckman. It's really an amazing thing that the two of them now begin to write this book. And the reason why it is so amazing is because parallel to the writing of the book, which I will give some details to, parallel to that, he instructs Ita Veeckman continuously, beginning with this September, October of 23, all the way until his death in 25, in such a way that at one point, as you can see here on the 26th of June of 24, he can write on a sheet of paper for her, Musa is standing under Michael, illuminated. The word Musa comes from her esoteric name in Ephesus, where she shows her connection with Artemisia, the goddess, a goddess that is very close to Michael, under Michael, and from the word Artemisia, she has this trunk of Musa, that's her name, and Rudolf Steiner refers to her through the year 24 in private letters and what have you as this Musa. So he's beginning to show you here that this ancient karma between the two of them, this destiny where they had worked together, is rekindled and makes it possible that they will go now into the future. And of course, a lot of the events that happen later, the foundation stone, the class, the founding of the medical section, etc., have to do with this relationship and with this working together. Now, the question is, how do they work at the book that they write, and why do they write this book? And the working together is a very interesting one. You can really see karma at work here, in the sense that you have his notes, his comments, and her recollections that basically state that he would ask her to present, for example, it goes on many layers. So he would ask her to present a scientific fact, and then he would interpret it spiritually. Or in reverse, that he would find a spiritual, he will find a spiritual fact, and he would look to see how it is reflected in what he calls her female human brain. So this is very physiological, very deep. This is not just a getting together and exchanging notes. And she remembers, and she is able to do this with him because they had already been in a student-teacher relationship before. And now they are renewing that so that she can bring some notes to him, and then he can mold them and let them go through the spiritual world and come back then and write it in a clean handwriting, which I will show you some images in a minute. The work goes essentially from this October of 23 to middle of August, maybe, or to the beginning of August, if you will. of 24. And now Rudolf Steiner gives a lecture that I think that all of us should know extremely well, and that is the this lecture that he gave on August the 3rd of 1924. The title that I gave it there is not the title in the book, not in English, not in German. I just put that slide so that we know where we're at. But Rudolf Steiner talks about the karma of the human beings that are Michaelites. Rudolf Steiner says Michael human beings, if you want to call them that. And I would like to read you now from this lecture, I think you will be as impressed as I am about what's actually going on. And so he begins by saying that we have seen what a powerful spirit Michael is, what strong forces he has. And now he says, now the Michael impulses, and I'm reading, I'm quoting from the lecture. Now the Michael impulses, and this is of great importance for the karma of every single anthroposophist. The Michael impulses are of a kind that enter deeply and intensely into the whole being of man. We know from previous descriptions that the rulership of Michael, if so we may call it, beginning for earthly life at the end of the 1870s, was preceded by the rulership of Gabriel. And I have described how the rulership of Gabriel is connected with forces that go through the line of physical inheritance, forces related to physical reproduction. So let's keep that in mind. Gabriel works through physical inheritance, through reproduction, through the physical reproduction. The forces of Michael are the very opposite of this. The rulership of Gabriel is characterized by the fact that his impulses enter strongly into the physical bodily nature of the human being. Michael, on the other hand, works intensely into the spiritual being of man. Okay, so once again, Gabriel works directly into the physical body. That means that when you are born as an Italian, you have strong forces that make you an Italian, that bind you to that earth, that bind you to that race, that bind you to that nation, and so on. Michael, on the other hand, works intensely into the spiritual being of man. You can tell this from the very fact that he is the administrator of the cosmic intelligence. Interesting sideline, we always take cosmic intelligence as having come to man, but Michael is still present there. We should talk about that sometime. Taking their start from the spiritual, these forces work through and through the human being. So, for example, if the Michael forces work into the consciousness soul, from the consciousness soul, they can go into the etheric body and from there into the physical body, if you will. That's the path from the spiritual into the physical. I continue with Rudolf Steiner. They work into the spiritual, from there into the soul nature, and from there into the bodily nature of man. So let me repeat that, if you will, more completely. So from the spiritual, they work into the astral body, from the astral body into the etheric, from the etheric into the physical. Now here, I need to insert an understanding that one can slowly get if one concerns oneself with these things medically for a while. And that is the fact that this pathway of entering the ego into the astral, into the etheric, into the physical, that is describing directly the path of the will. On the other hand, the ego can go directly into the head, and from the head through the nervous system, so the ego directly spiritually into the physical. And when it does that, that's where you have the path of thinking. That's extremely shortly put. But I hope you will share with me this amazing fact that Rudolf Steiner is actually telling us, that Mikhail wants to direct, Mikhail wants to lead us back into the spirit on the paths of the will, in the same way in which he led us into the physical world on the path of thinking. So here you have an inkling from a different point of view why this is important. Back reading Rudolf Steiner. Now, in the karmic connections of life, these super earthly forces are constantly at work. Beings of the higher hierarchies are working with man and upon him. It is thus that the karma of a man takes shape. If we would have time, we would need to have a discussion in a group. What does that mean? And so it is with the Mikhail forces. Working as they do upon the whole human being, they work also very strongly into karma. So, from the spirit into the physical body, that is the influence then that appears in the karma of the Mikhailite. If therefore certain human beings, and this in the last resort applies to you all, my dear friends, if certain human beings are especially connected with the stream of Mikhail, their individual karmas can only be understood when thought of in connection with the stream of Mikhail. Now, Mikhail is a spirit who stands in a special relationship to the sun and to all sun impulses. This being the case, we shall realize what a profound significance his impulses must have for those who are especially exposed to them. In effect, his forces will work right into the physical organization. For the Mikhail human beings, therefore, in parentheses, if we may use this term, we must connect the physical phenomena of health and illness with karma in an even higher degree, in a much higher degree than for Gabriel or Raphael human beings or the like. Things in the universe are very complicated. Actually, in the German, it's more like intertwined and convoluted. And although Raphael is the spirit most intimately connected with the art of healing, nevertheless, it is Mikhail who brings the karma of the human beings nearest of all to health and to disease. I'm sure that whether you have heard this lecture before or not, I'm sure that we all really need to pause for a second and to ask ourselves, even at this stage, do we pay enough attention to that? Do we understand that the health and illness of an anthroposophist is truly directly related to the will of the Mikhail forces? So this is why I find it so amazing that we do not pay enough attention to this book that ultimately Rudolf Steiner and Dita Weichmann write, which, you know, in English and partially in German, we call Fundamentals of Therapy. Frankly, even when you read the many memoirs, documents, notes from Dita Weichmann herself and from her time, you don't see this book emphasized. Rudolf Steiner corrected the galleys to the book within days or hours of his death, and it was actually published only after his passing. But I think that one can begin slowly to get a sense that this book is the great Mikhail teaching for the health of the Mikhail human beings. That is really what I wanted to present. And here, I will give you some examples of what is being talked about in the book. But let me just, and I will show also another aspect in a minute. So there are, for the time being, let's just call them 20 chapters. And I have picked a couple of examples from the chapters, and I've picked some examples from the end of the book where Rostana talks about some, quote, my quote, fundamental, if you will, remedies that he suggested himself. So here you have the chapter 13, and the chapter 13 is entitled On the Essential Nature of Being Ill and of Healing. That's the comment that I wanted to make a second ago, that the way this book is written is that every chapter has, every chapter reveals, so to speak, the esoteric, meditative, spiritual essence where Michael comes in. And then it goes into the makeup, into the problems that the ego and the astral body can have as they are getting into the physical body. Because remember that there is a Lucifer and an Ahriman there, and they cause aberrations, they cause abnormalities. And now the healing must come in such a way that the spiritual bodies have the opportunity to incarnate properly deeper into the physical and into the etheric. That's sort of the essential idea here. So I will give you if I may say so, a classical example, and that is, and that is the situation with rickets. So in rickets, you have, of course, the weak bones, the bowing of the lower legs, for example, in the children, yeah? And that is due to the fact that you do not have the ability of the will, of the ego, to descend all the way into the lower legs, into the whole bony structure of the body, and by descending into them, to strengthen them in such a way that the bones become the tools of the ego, which we can use then in movement, for example. So how can that be healed? Rudolf Steiner makes the comment that you would use their first sulfur in order to allow the etheric body to be more receptive, to be more malleable, to be more alive. And once you have done that, you come with phosphorus, with potentized phosphorus, highly diluted phosphorus, that the ego can connect with, and with the help of this phosphorus, enter all the way into the bones. So from an anthroposophical point of view, the cure for rickets, and from that point of view, also a little bit going into the direction of osteoporosis, but then it gets a little bit more complicated still, the cure will be an alternating between sulfur and phosphorus. Now, I've given you some images there because I just wanted to show that both of them are very much connected to light. So we know that in order to not develop rickets, you need to have enough sunlight. The light that is coming from above down. But if that is not enough, then the way mankind has developed and the way we are looking at medicine nowadays, we are going in the direction of vitamin D. What is vitamin D? It is light that has become earth. It is light that has descended into matter. So now we are coming from below and give the vitamin D in order to replace the actual coming down of the ego into the bony structures. And this is sort of, in a sense, the entire mystery, if you will, but mystery in the sense of puzzle, the hidden activity of modern medicine. That modern medicine supplies from below, from the earth point of view, what should be a strengthening of the upper members that are coming down. Essentially, this is one place where the adversary forces are blocking the karma work of Michael. I'm repeating a lot of the statements again and again, because I want everybody to really get a sense for the unbelievable importance, one, of, if you will, just in general, what does anthroposophical medicine really want? But secondly, of this particular book that is actually sort of like a brevier for the priest, something that one needs to study on a daily basis and really be familiar with. To a certain extent, some of the non-physicians can look at it. You'll see in a second where that might come in to be important, but certainly it needs to have a incredibly larger presence among the anthroposophical doctors. I'll just leave it at that. The next one here, look at chapter 14. The title again of the chapter is about the therapeutic way of thinking, right? And what do you need in order to think well? Well, we've said it before, the ego needs to come in, but what can happen now is that due to Ahrimanic forces, you can have an over-accentuation of the substances that the ego needs in order to perform the function of the sense organs, the functions of thinking, the nerve structures. And when that happens, that there is too much, of the activity of the quartz forces, of the silica forces, then you have desiccation, you have an increased sensitivity in organs that should not have sensitivity, like the irritable bowel, and you can have irritability and sensitivity of the senses. And there again, Rudolf Steiner gives several means of how to remedy that situation, one of them being that you combine the silica with some sulfur, and that way you induce a new flexibility and a new attenuation of this overabundance, of this drying out. I hope that everybody can think at this point of the representative of man statue, where you have Ahriman there below in the cave, all dried up and sclerotic, and this is this portrayal of the desiccation that is taken to an extreme. And now the Michaelic forces help to bring that back out into a balance. What I'm doing here is I would like to take a little sidestep for a second because I want to show for those who are not familiar so much with the work that we do at True Botanica that we really are trying to take these anthroposophical, highly diluted, potentized remedies, and we want to use them, and we want to see how can we make them work better. What can we do to improve the effectiveness of these substances? And what I'm showing you here is that when one lets seeds grow and germinate with water, you have then the control. And then look what happens to the growth, how it increases more and more in a very nuanced way as we potentize the sulfur. And here down below, you have the difference between control and 10 to the 30th dilution of the substance. There's no more substance left. There's only etheric substance. There's only etheric force, etheric process present. And look at the difference that it makes to the germination, to the increasing of the etheric body. And this is a method that Rudolf Steiner encouraged Lily Colisco to do, and other people did it in the meantime and then stopped, and we're continuing to do this work for a while if we can. Let's look at chapter 16. I thought that was really interesting. Here you have the opposite of what we had before. I just wanted to show you an example before of the Ahrimanic forces interfering with the proper descent of the spiritual bodies into the physical. Here you have the problem of proteinaceous forces that are typical for the oyster, proteinaceous forces falling out of the normal, you know, like a river that is going over its banks, and they do not want to, they cause this cloudiness of proteins, if you will. Then what happens is that on the one hand, they can induce the typical typhoid fever with the diarrhea and so on and so forth. In other words, this whole fluid river that is just uncontrolled. On the other hand, however, they are mimicking a process that is happening on the outside in the oyster itself, where the oyster protects itself from to remain as an oyster, if you will, by continuously depositing and removing from itself calcium. Well, when that happens in the human being, you get calcification of the arteries. So instead of the organism working with all its processes in harmony, allowing the appropriate substances to enter into tissues, suddenly you have this deposition on the outside, you have the calcification of the arteries. So first, you have a luciferic process that where you have inflammation, where you have a fluid that goes over its borders, and then you have, as a consequence of that, the deposition of the hard matter and the hardening that comes in. You have, obviously, the counterbalance, so to speak, the backlash, that where there's too much luciferism going on, now you'll have an ahrimanic backlash, and you have the calcification of the arteries. And look what substance Rudolf Steiner is recommending. He is recommending antimony or stibium. You see the crystal there, and just when you look at it, you can already see that those are forces that are looking like the uprightness of the ego. Rudolf Steiner calls it antimony is the ego forces. And when one gives that to the patient, ideally, one can counteract the disease process. And I have shown you the principle before, but just watch this one time what happens when I have the control here. And then watch this here, when I'm diluting it 8 times and there's only a process left, there's no more substance there. Once you've diluted it 10 to the eighth, you're just essentially, most of the substance is gone. You have only etheric forces, and look how they help the etheric body to grow in the germinating wheat seeds. Last example that I want to give is taken from the end of the book, where Rudolf Steiner describes recipes, if you will, remedies that can be helpful in treating diseases. And the one that is absolutely the most beautiful of them all is the one where he describes a combination between lead and sugar and honey. And the way it is this, that, again, it goes in the direction of calcification, but other diseases also, dizziness, vertigo, fainting spells, because the Saturn forces that are supposed to give a protective umbrella are not present anymore. So the ego is too weak to penetrate the body all the way into all through the whole organism. So then what you do is you give the body potentized lead. Now you have the ego under your control, so to speak. The ego needs, however, to be strengthened because it is weak. So you give it some sugar. But this stronger ego that has, if you will, the lead lance in its hand needs to be directed properly. And that is directed from the astral body into the etheric, and that happens through honey. It is an amazing, complete picture of what the anthroposophical, Michaelic medical thinking has to be. And we, and of course, the Walida company has done this remedy for many years. We at True Botanica have attempted to make it in our own way. And you can see here, I show you some, just two or three steps on how this is done. You, we took a lead, sort of made like a lead plate, if you will, make like a pie. And we put the sugar in, and we put the honey in. And then, according to Rudolf Steiner's indications, you let that really become incandescent in such a way that everything is burned through, in such a way that they penetrate one another. These three become now completely molded together. And what you have then is, at the end, you have a, at the bottom of the pail that you, all this thing has been burning in, you have this new penetration of lead, honey, and sugar. And we thought that it was very interesting that it had sort of a threefold look. This is a little elemental being here with the nervous system, the rhythmical system, and the metabolic system, with a little bit of poetical license, if you will. And then that gets made into a powder, and that gets put into, that gets potentized, diluted over and over very highly until, as you can see here, there's no more lead left as substance. And we're always showing this to patients so that they can be reassured that we're not poisoning them. And then that gets put into a, it gets sprayed over these little globules, and then you take that by mouth. So these are some examples that I wanted to show you. Now, because of the advancing time, I need to go really fast with this, but what I wanted to show you is that there are mysteries upon mysteries in this book. And here you have the English name, obviously. And just on the margin here, the German. I would suggest if anybody wants to buy the book, to get the one from Mercury Press, because Gerald Carnot and Christoph van Tellingen, a doctor, so two doctors, they have done an amazing job on printing the English right next to the German. So it gives you a certain security that if you have a question, you can always go back and check to see, was the translation appropriate? Do we understand it? It's just something good to look at. Besides that, we're supporting then Mercury Press in Spring Valley. When you look at these, you can tell, you can say to yourself, okay, here I have chapter one, then I have chapter two, then I have chapter three, and so on and so forth. But that is not the case. What happens is that if you look at Rudolf Steiner's manuscript, he writes, why does the human being get ill? Here, chapter, why does the human being become ill? Oops, that's chapter two in the printed version. But Rudolf Steiner declares it as one. Next. The phenomena of life. The Erscheinungen des Lebens. So the phenomena of life. Here's chapter three. But he actually writes it as chapter two. What I want to tell you is, and I leave it at that, what I want to tell you is that he does something that is incredible. He actually starts with this chapter two here. And he goes through seven chapters. And then after that, he has 12 chapters all the way to the end. And finally, he adds one more chapter at the end, if you will, the 13th. this needs to be studied one time. And if we would have time, I could tell you more about it, but I should be just about finished. If the chapter two, and here chapter, the actual chapter seven, they are exact opposites. In this chapter, as the first one, if you will, he talks about movement that is coming from outside of the human body in the chapter eight, which is actually seven. He talks about the ego being too weak to come from the inside out. So there is the evolutionary aspect is in there. The spatial aspect of the 12 is in there. And then at the end, he puts that pinnacle on it by adding one more chapter that he puts up front where he basically gives you an exposition of everything. So I'm sure that we're all thinking about this, that we have the first Gaudeamus here, the seven columns, the 12 columns leading in, and then in the middle, the representative of man. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because Rudolf Steiner says at one point, with this book is given the beginning of a new initiate medicine. So a new esoteric school, a new beginning. What is new about this initiate medicine? What is different from anything that has ever been before, ever? Even to a certain extent in his own life, what is different in 1924? What is different is that everything that he does is meant to lead to the etheric Christ. The Christ who is the Lord of Karma, the Christ who is working together with Michael. So in a sense, the book Fundamentals of Therapy is a book of initiation that shows us how from the spiritual into the physical, we can heal ourselves in such a way that we might be able to overcome the illnesses that prevent us from seeing the Christ in the etheric. This is a beginning. And with that, I would like to suggest that it becomes understandable why Rudolf Steiner is giving Ita Wegman the Rose Cross in many forms, but this is the one that he gave for her to wear. And I would like to finish at this point and hope that you will understand why I am beginning, under the influence of the preparation that I've done for this, I'm beginning to understand that this Fundamentals of Therapy should actually be considered one of the basic books. And with that, I thank you for your attention. I hope that a lot of you will be enthusiastically wanting to take some anthroposophical remedies, because they help us next to the meditations to actually, and to our studies, of course, to advance a little bit. And if you find it in your heart, of course, you know, support the Kolisko Institute so that we can, with a donation, so that we can continue doing some of the work that I've just presented to you. I thank you for your attention. And I'm turning it over now to Alberto.
Good evening, everyone. This is Lisa Dalton, one of your central regional members. Thank you, Dr. Ross, so much. It's an excellent contribution. I'm going to help facilitate if we can maybe handle a few questions. If everyone looks at the bottom of their screen, they're under the participants. If you click on participants, a box will open and a button at the bottom will show raise hand. So if someone has a question, you can raise your hand and then we can unmute you so that you can introduce yourself and then ask your question. So does anyone have a question? Anyone, anyone?
I do. Where is the button? I can't find the button for to raise my hand. Who do I see it? Sorry.
All right. Well, we have you here. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Gita Labrans. I spent 30 years serving in various Waldorf schools in a variety of capacities. And my question actually is, how do I get in contact with Dr. Ross for a personal consultation?
Well, it's a little bit personal, but let's just make it easy. Call the Paulina Medical Clinic in Chicago, Paulina. And the phone number is 773-583-7793. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gita, and thank you, Doctor. Who else might have a question? Let's see, I see, I think that's Laura. Is that Laura? Let me unmute you, see if I can unmute you. Or, Laura, why don't you go ahead? There you are. Oh, Kofi, okay.
I would like to answer that question briefly in two ways. Number one, of course, anthroposophical physicians have used a lot of these remedies over the years. And recently, the effort was made to actually do create what is called a vademecum. So that is a right now a pretty thick book that you can get from the Physicians Association for Anthroposophical Medicine, PAAM, and there you have the experience of doctors accumulated from the world over of what they've been able to do with the remedies. So which remedy they gave for which illness. As far as the book itself is concerned, there is actually very little available in English, which is why I was so happy when I had the opportunity to just make everybody aware that this thing exists. There are tiny little booklets in German, but I intend for the future to, both collect and to write something about it so that it might be helpful. So that's a brief answer.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Timothy Hollingsworth out of Central Coast, California.
Go ahead.
Yes, I was actually a patient of Dr. Rentia several years back. I don't know if he remembers when I was in the Chicago area.
Uh-oh.
But I was... I'm just very intrigued by the integration of the medicine as actually a tool for spirituality. In other words, what I'm getting from Dr. Rentia's presentation, I haven't read this book, my friend Monique has it, but the implication or the inference that physical health, any adverse health is actually a lack of spiritual development. And I guess my question is, what has Dr. Rentia or his wife, I met his wife also, or any of the other anthroposophists, what have they experienced in as far as spiritual evolution within individuals by using these anthroposophical medicines, if that's possible.
I did not say at all that all illness comes from a weakness. For example, you could have an illness by being too strong. You could have an illness by being interfered with, so that you simply in your karma have suddenly an exposure to some luciferic forces that are interfering with you right now. And Michael forces are trying to overcome that. And in order to be able to anchor the Michael forces into the body, you need remedies. And the remedies can show themselves first by soothing, by removing a physical ailment, a pain, a headache. They can also work very effectively, you know, for psychiatric situations. But we're talking here about remedies that are actually addressing the illnesses that we all declare as such. So this is not. I will leave it at that. Now, if you think about the fact that the foundation stone has these three parts of soul of man, you live in the limbs, you live in the heart lungs, you live in the head. I've always been intrigued by the fact that Rudolf Steiner talks about the physicality of it all. But underneath it, of course, you can connect the three members that are mentioned, the three parts of the human body. You can connect them with three soul lives. And so the remedies can affect the soul as such, but I would rather not, I have an example that I can give you. A friend of mine was left home by his parents because he was old enough to be alone, late teen years, and no sooner do they walk out of the house that he develops what turns out to be an appendicitis. So he has this inflammation in his abdomen, a very painful, reasonably dangerous if it's not treated. So the anthroposophical doctor gave him silver, argentum. Now, silver is connected to the moon forces, and the moon forces can control the fever, can control the inflammation. And he got over that illness just with that remedy. But the interesting thing is that after that illness, he suddenly now had another growth spurt. He also developed his thinking better. He developed certain talents that he did not have before. So you see the connection here between the physical and the spiritual.
Yeah, it's an integrated evolution, it sounds like.
Yep.
Thank you, Dr. Rentea. Can I build on that for a moment and ask, are you also talking about that sometimes we bring an illness into us so that we can clear something in order to have that growth spurt and that greater spiritual healing?
You know, absolutely. The one thing that I did not tell you is that at the end of the book, essentially the last chapter on therapy is about curative eurythmy, okay? So here you have maybe the opportunity to see that the importance. All right, let me start again. Let's say that you have a fatigue. It's one thing to get the physical body whipped up again by doing, let's say, workouts, lifting weights, what have you. It's another thing to overcome that lassitude of the astral body, of the inability of the ego to come in, by either engaging these higher members into a movement that descends all the way into the etheric body. And that's what Eurythmy is all about. Or you can take certain potentized substances that only gently assist the ego to do what it wants to do in order to descend. Again, we are constantly in medicine coming from below up, trying to force the physical body to do some things. And here is a little attempt on my part to just point out to how we can go maybe the other way around.
Thank you.
And yes, you know, remember that Rudolf Steiner tells us, you all know this, that you do not fall asleep because you're tired, but rather you make yourself tired in order to enable to disengage from the body and go to sleep. Well, it's the same thing with an illness. It forces you to pay attention that something is not in harmony, and now you are making an effort to do something about it.
Excellent. Thank you, Timothy, for that question.
You're welcome.
Is there anyone else with a question that might like to ask?
If I may add into that last conversation, the question, what is the distinction between an illness and a physical accident, such as breaking a leg or an arm, versus an illness in relationship to our etheric forces and our ego?
One example that is very real that I can make up right now is the fact that I'm just smiling because this is directly from Rudolf Steiner. Yes, you can be going out of the door in order to do something. Excuse me. And the Michaelic forces can change your attention in such a way that you may fall and break a leg and have to stay in the house for a while. And this is the connection between karma and accidents. If you would have gone out the door, something would have happened to you. You all know this. I just want to remind you of all this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And Dr. Rentia, would you say the same as does he say it's the same for when someone does something to you that incurs an injury?
The one thing that we really need to pay attention to is that if you think that in some of the lectures, Rudolf Steiner says, look, it could be that you're building future karma. It could be that it's the resolution of a past karma. Well, let me tell you this. In real life, whenever you talk about medicine, instead of two situations, think of a million. Okay, so we need to be very careful. I'm so tempted to go into certain luciferic phenomena, but I'm not going to do that now. It depends on the situation, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Well, thank you.
But, you know, one needs to, I mean, that's what life is all about. And, you know, like, if you think of here, let me say this, maybe this is the end, you know. If you think of this, that you have Ita Veltman, who is such a really an elevated person, that you know, Rudolf Steiner has her as his right hand. You probably know that towards the end, when anthroposophists were accepted into the first class, they were actually brought into the carpentry room where Rudolf Steiner was there with Ita Veltman. And he says to the applicants, shake my hand and shake Ita Veltman's hand to tell us that you're going to be faithful to the mission that is trying to be accomplished here. Words to that effect. Because she is leading the school with me. Well, it needs to be interpreted. But the point is that time flies a couple of years, right? Rudolf Steiner dies, and now comes those huge conflicts in the society. And Ita Veltman at one point is expelled from the society. Well, you know, I don't think that was exactly a Michaelic impulse that removed her from that place. That's how life goes. You know, and 100 years later, or nearly there, now everybody's trying to undo what was done there. But this is what I meant, that one has to be careful. Is the impulse coming from the spirit of the good, or is the impulse coming from an adversary force that is trying to interfere with, you know, what we're doing? And by the way, the one illness that I find most troublesome is when we are interfered with in such a way that we become sleepy in our consciousness, that we don't realize our inertia, our procrastination, our lack of enthusiasm to do things, to have initiative. We're approaching Christmas, so Rudolf Steiner calls Christmas the birth of the Lord, I have a block now. The Geburt des Tüchtigen, the birth of the able, of the worker, you know, the one who has initiative. Yeah. So that's what we, through remedies and eurythmy and talking to our friends, that's what we need to do to get ourselves to be alive again.
That's very inspiring, Dr. Rentea. I think that's a great place to bring this to a close. And I want to invite Hazel to come back in.
David, are you there? Did you want to read the verse, David?
Yes, can you hear me?
Sure.
The wishes of the soul are springing. The deeds of the will are thriving. The fruits of life are maturing. I feel my destiny. My destiny finds me. I feel my star. My star is finding me. I feel my in life. My goals in life are finding me. My soul and the great world are one. Life grows more radiant about me. Life grows more arduous for me. Life grows more abundant within me.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. Thank you so much, Dr. Rentea. We really, really appreciate all of your sharings today.
Indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you to you, too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Alberto, might you tell where the recording will be found?